welcome to the show. This is Leslie Draffin. Thank you for being here. Welcome to the Tragedy Academy, a show created to bridge societal divides in a judgment-free zone using candor and humor. How are you doing today, Leslie?
I'm doing great, Jay. Thanks so much for having me.
I appreciate you coming on the show and, you know, sending us that message, because I have to tell you, this might sound super weird, right? So I know what you're here to discuss, and I understand the energy work that goes with it, the femininity, and all those things that are tied into your entire message, right? And I have to tell you, when I saw your picture, as soon as I saw it, it made me want a hug. Like, I don't know if that sounds weird, but you're just extremely loving. You could see like that feminine energy just glowing off of you, that it felt like it would be such a great feeling to get a hug from you.
Aw, thank you.
So that apparently didn't sound that weird.
No, it didn't. Well, what's interesting is, like, for my whole 20s, I came across very cold. Like, I would be like told that I was cold. And now I'm at 38. It's like, oh, we've done a lot of work.
Well, you know what? And it's amazing that we call work going back to self.
Yeah. Absolutely.
We will hold on to everything that gives us pain just to remain safe.
Mm-hmm.
Safe. To include a mask that people say you're unapproachable.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a protection. I mean, if you can't spot a defense, I mean, that's as big as they get.
100%.
So I want to give you a moment to introduce yourself, tell us where you're from, what you're here to discuss, and then we can kind of go from there.
Awesome. Well, like you said, my name is Leslie Draffin, and I am a former TV news anchor turned somatic psychedelic guide. And I really focus on helping women come back home to themselves by eradicating shame, accepting themselves, and I do that through working with them on their cycle, on sensuality, and intentional psychedelics. So I really found myself through psychedelics and working with my womb after being deeply disconnected for most of my 20s, abusing alcohol, abusing Adderall. I was really living in a shame spiral that for me sort of started at 18 when I got diagnosed with herpes. My dad's a preacher. Like, I was very much someone that was deeply in the church. And when that happened to me, I just found disconnection was the easiest way to go about life. And so I did that through substances and by getting addicted to achieving, which was what let me be so successful in my job. But like internally, I was just so disconnected. I just felt like shit.
No, I can completely relate to that. One of the reasons I do what I do now, I left the corporate world, but it also comes with that shame lens that you earn as a child when somebody gives that to you. It's a horrible thing to hand out. It really is, because it's almost permanent marker if you don't get a chance to look at it or examine it, right? And you will view everything through that lens. And I did the same thing for my childhood. I was bullied and, you know, had all sorts of situations, and I got, you know, the same masks that I came up with were the ones were overachievers or I need to have a drive. I've got to have this car, got to have this house, got to have these things. These things are going to finally make me feel happy. And that's a false sense of security that's sold to you by society. If I get these things, especially when you grow up in the lower socioeconomic bracket, you think that you will actually waste time. You will waste decades looking for something that never needed to be found, because the people that are sitting there with it are not happy even there. They're just not telling you. They're wearing what? Their unapproachable mask.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. For me, what's interesting is when I started to really come back home to myself, I realized I had this very core wound from infancy. Probably because I was adopted and I spent the first month of life in foster care. And like, who knows?
Like, that doesn't sound like... Well, see, I'm missing this leg. Adopted. And it might have been from a motorcycle accident, but I'm not quite sure. Like, I think you hit the nail on the head. That's not a hard one to swing for.
No. And it was just me feeling like I needed to prove myself so that I could be loved. So I never really felt like I needed to get the things. I needed to have the relationship. I needed to be so successful, be so good that like, how could you not love me? And that was me like for my entire childhood. And I used to say, you know, as an adopted kid, I felt like there was only two ways you went. Either be so perfect, you'll never give me back, or fuck you, you're not my real parents and I'm going to do whatever I want. That was my sister. I was number one. Like, I'm going to be so perfect. Make straight A's, do all the things that you could never give me back.
Fat pain in the ass, man. To have to do that, to maintain that facade. And we see them everywhere. It's comical. We have characters in society and we watch them and we're like, that's their life.
Yeah.
No, like they literally have voices. People will inflect certain tones. They'll have ways that they portray themselves in moments. And, you know, what's funny is I talked to an anesthesiologist once, and he said that one of the coolest things or the funniest things to see is how people speak going in and how they speak coming out.
Wow.
Because the character's not there on the way out until they're awake again. So there's this period of time where they're what? Authentic?
Mm-hmm.
Like it's a window into a small slice of time where that's actually you.
Yep. I think psychedelics do that too.
Yes. I'm super excited to talk about that. But I want to give you a chance to talk to the women out there and tell them why they should take the time to care for themselves in this manner, why they should respect themselves enough to give them the time to deal with whatever it is that they're going through and accept that it's perfectly normal. And I want to hit on one small thing, and I don't know if it's my place to ask it, say it, whatever it is, and I'm not sure that it happens all the time, but one of the things that have come up over time in speaking with women about different medical issues or, you know, menstrual cycles, things like that, and when they go to the doctor, there's a tendency for a certain type of doctor to almost hold you in check for what you are trying to convey as an extreme pain or situation. But I feel like there's almost like an implicit bias that says, I go through the same thing as you. So even though I might even believe you, you're not going to be worse off than me. So you might as well suck it up because somebody told me I have to suck it up. And I just kind of wanted to throw that out there because I feel like that's like an elephant in the room that never gets addressed.
Okay, that's so fascinating. So yes, women get gaslit all the time when we go to the doctors and we think it was just from male doctors, but it sometimes happens more often with female doctors.
That's what I would expect.
Seriously. And I went to this a couple of years ago. I went to this forum in my town where there was a bunch of female doctors. It was like a gynecology talking about like the menstrual cycle, yes, but like sexual health and just women's health in general. And I saw this panel of female gynecologists. There was an endocrinologist and maybe one other type of doctor sit there and basically say that like it didn't hurt to get an IUD put in, that they were doing it for in children, and that like there were so many things that I had experienced and my clients had experienced that were just not true. And I went up to him afterwards. I was like, are you seriously telling me that, because I've had two IUDs, that this is not painful and like cervical type procedure? I was like, the lady looked at me. She's like, yeah, it wasn't painful for me. I was like, I think you're lying to yourself, first of all. And secondly, like, regardless of if it is your experience or not, how dare you try to say that this isn't the truth?
You know that there are multiple experiences to the same situation. Each human has their own unique fingerprint of an experience inside of their avatar. We heard yesterday, we were calling it that. But you have your own unique experience. There's a reason why you can eat peas and I think they taste like an ashtray, right? Same thing with pain.
Yeah.
It's exactly the same. You have a different set of receptors that respond in a certain way to whatever it is that you are being probed with or feeling inside or however. I don't know what the right terms are because I don't have a womb, obviously.
Yeah.
But I mean, it just seems like it's the empathetic move would be to just say, hey, look, Your lenses are different than my lenses. I'm going to go ahead and take your word for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And I have come across some incredibly empathetic doctors, but that situation just shocked the shit out of me. And I think what's interesting, like when we think about healthcare and women in general, it wasn't until 1993 that like our government required women to be included in studies for things like new medications, for things like anything.
I'm sorry, 1993. I'm laughing. That's just ridiculous that we were so blind.
And get this, those people, those women are most often not of reproductive age because we don't supply a good enough like baseline, those of us who are in our menstruating years. So they'll use postmenopausal women and claim that whatever is happening and working for them is going to work for people in reproductive age. And that's why we have so much misinformation out there around like diets, around certain exercises, and around medications themselves. It's wild.
The entire analytics that we have based our human experience off of are pools of information that are isolated in silos to groups of men or groups of, like you said, postmenopausal or people that don't fall into the group that should be getting that attention, you know, to get a really good baseline for what it is to have the human experience as a woman, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you're bringing up all valid points. At the end of the day, like, I feel bad. We had a guest on a while back that had endometriosis. And she was discussing what it was like to go through the process of convincing her doctors that she was in chronic pain to such a degree that she could not live her life. And she ended up having to hire an attorney to get doctors to give her a hysterectomy. And had to hear things like, well, you're not a woman if you have this done.
Oh, my God.
Right? Mm-hmm. And she did say one thing that was super interesting to me. Well, not interesting. It was very pointed. It really struck a chord. And that was that she knew in that moment, not exactly, but to a degree, what it felt like to be trans. And I was like, that makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. Right? To be told you are not who you are and be... It's coming right out of your mouth. You're looking at them. And to be told you don't exist in the form that you do is extremely disrespectful. And I can't imagine the shame that's carried in that moment for not feeling, not being validated as a fucking human in the gender that you identify with or are born with, however you want to interpret it. You know, I can't fathom what it would be to be in her shoes hearing that.
Yeah, I mean, it's really messed up. Endometriosis on average takes about 10 years to get a diagnosis. 10 years. And by that time, it can just be everywhere inside of a woman's body. And yeah, to be told that, like, I can't imagine the audacity of whatever person thought that they could tell this person, if you don't have a womb, you're not a woman. Because yeah, it's just really messed up.
But it's a body part. It's not you. I wish people would understand that. At our core, we're not our gender. We're who we are in the experience, right? Yeah. We're not anything. We're a puzzle piece. Each one of us are individually different and have to be that way. The times that we stick our arms out and our legs out in different directions to imitate other pieces, we don't fit in the bigger picture anymore, right? Be an edge if you're an edge. Be a corner if you're a corner. Be in the middle with, you know, all the pieces that confuse the shit out of me, right? But be that piece. And if it comes with a womb, it comes with a womb. If it comes with a they, it comes with a they. I don't give a shit, right? Just be a good person.
Yes, 100%.
It's my soapbox.
It's a good one.
I'm passionate about that community for the simple fact that, and I bring it up on the show because it's something that I've tried to work through over life. And I had gynecomastia when I was a kid. I grew up in a small redneck town that was extremely bigoted. And I was a ripped kid that, you know, could have been doing anything. And people came after me. They threw things at me. They screamed at me. They had names for me, epithets, you name it. They did it.
Yeah.
And it made me get, a look into what it feels like to be told you're somebody who you're not.
Yeah.
Right? And not that I didn't want to be that. It's just that I wasn't that.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
But I took the burden of, you know, that situation. I hope that, I can only hope that somebody else didn't.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, I hope there's somebody that got to live their life in that situation that was truly there, that got to make it without having to go through that. I'll take that now. I wouldn't have then. I'll take it now, knowing that that's the possibility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Psilocybin, right?
Yeah.
Something that's been around since the dawn of time. We ignore Mother Earth. Mother Earth does so many amazing things and synchronicities and movements, and it doesn't make mistakes. Mm. Never makes mistakes. And we just assume that the voice is only one way.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a million ways to speak to us. Mm-hmm. And why not through the most natural way that it can grow from inside itself? It's giving us keys in small increments. Mm-hmm. You know, we have ayahuasca, we have psilocybin now, we have DMT, we have all these different things that are causing awakenings and showing us that we're in cycles.
Yeah.
Right? And I think that you finding a way to highlight that for women's issues and their pain and struggles is something that is extremely unique. Mm-hmm. It's one of the reasons why your application stuck out to me. I was like, well, you know, this really is something that people are not talking about.
Right.
So can you tell me what that journey looks like when you're, I would say, I my metaphor is you can't grow a tree unless you're on your knees planting the seed. Right? Mm. So you hit a juncture in life where you're planting a new human and you're regrowing them. You're not changing who they are. You're just giving them a birth without the shells that are given to you throughout life, right? Mm-hmm. And I want to know what that looks like, where you find psilocybin and how you end up, you know, going down this path to being a very huggable person.
I love it. Okay. So I think what's interesting to start with is I used to be, like I said, I used to get called, like said that I was cold. I was very much in my masculine energy. Like I said, I got addicted to this hustle and grind and achieving. Mm. And in 2019, I had a spiritual awakening where I really started to understand that I had been doing so much for so long to only live in my head because I felt so unsafe in my body. And I had built up these walls around my heart because that was what I felt the only way to continue doing my job, which was to report on the worst of humanity day after day.
Oh, so, hey,
yeah.
The most scripted role in the world.
Yep. And when I played that role.
Oh, you probably, do you have that character? Can you do the report? You know how they have on TikTok? Where the woman's like, yeah, 100%. You know, sometimes she's like, and at 3 p.m., there was a blah, 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 blah. They go into this whole persona. You're like, mm-hmm. And you have been trained to pay attention when that voice comes out, which is gross.
It's fascinating. So I started realizing in 2019 that I just was playing a news anchor on TV. And I dressed up for Halloween at work that year and wore this like witch outfit. And I was like, wait, this is who the fuck I am. This like witchy woman. And yet then I had to like take off my fun makeup to then go put on my TV makeup and put that mask on.
People don't realize that there's a mask for every single role.
Yep.
Just because unless you are authentically doing what you love and it's what you're here for,
yeah,
then you're wearing a mask. And it's okay if your passion is not rooted in something that doesn't require a mask or requires a mask to make money, right?
Yeah.
So you do that. You use it as a piggy bank, but recognize you have to wear a mask those days.
Yeah.
Right? But all those roles have it. And we do some weird shit.
Mm-hmm.
Really weird stuff.
Very. And for me, the mask felt like such a part of me. Like literally in that movie, The Mask, where he like suddenly can't take it off anymore.
Mm.
Like there were times when I was like, who am I? I felt like nobody knew me. I was in therapy and I would sit there and be like, my husband doesn't know me. Like my friends don't know me. And it was because I did not know myself.
Bingo.
And so all through 2019, I felt this call that I needed to get off of birth control because I had been on it for like 16 years. And every time I would meditate or I would go like, you know, connect with nature, I would hear this thing inside me say like, you're stifling your feminine energy because you are on the pill, because it's stopping your reproductive system pretty much.
It's doing something.
Mm-hmm. And I knew I didn't want to have children. So my husband got a vasectomy in 2020 and I came off of the pill and all hell broke loose. Like the little girl. Emotional floodgates, physical floodgates, like my hair started to fall out. This was also in the midst of the pandemic. So that stress was already so heightened. I was the essential anchor. Like you saw those people who got to anchor from their houses. That was never me because I was too essential.
Oh, they couldn't do it without me. Stop sign in a hurricane.
100%. Like, here you go.
That person that you're like, what did they do it out
there? Good. It's probably because that person was told they're so good at their job, they couldn't do it without them. That's what I heard.
Oh, they'll sell you that one. That's always a great one. You're just too good at what you do. We need you.
Seriously. And at my station, you know who they were, like who was always too good? The women. It's because we would do so much more.
Yeah, because it was ingrained in you to try to prove yourself.
Uh-huh.
One of the biggest facades that were ever sold to America, and this is going to probably get me slapped down, was the government embracing the feminism or the feminist movement. And I'll explain why, because I don't think that there's any reason a woman shouldn't be feminine. The reason I'm explaining this is I think that the government saw that movement and said, hell yeah, come on into the workforce, each and every one of you, and we'll go ahead and inflate the cost of everything. You're never going home. It's two incomes for the rest of your life. Congratulations, you can't mother your child.
And I think I have so many thoughts about it. And I'm someone who is very, you know, pro-women, pro-feminism.
Fuck yeah, they're smarter than me.
But what that was rooted in is wounded masculine and wounded feminine energy. Mm. And when we introduced the pill, where we were suddenly stopping the menstrual cycle, that just allowed all of these women to be very deeply rooted in their masculine energy and really separate themselves from a lot of parts of themselves that come naturally and beautifully to women. And so absolutely, 100% agree. It's like that whole generation of women, very much like they're in their masculine. They're very much in their proving and in their success and their doing.
Connects. Early millennials. That's where this all, this is where this all showed up. The forgotten generation is what they call us. The latchkey kids, the ones that had to live completely disassociated from our families.
Yep.
You know, the commercials at 10 p.m. You know where your kids are?
Yeah.
My kids didn't. I was running around like a lunatic.
Yeah.
Right.
And so for me, you know, when I came off of the pill, I really started to grapple with not only the physical symptoms that I had, which ultimately led to me getting diagnosed with PCOS, which stands for polycystic ovarian syndrome.
PCOS. I shouldn't know these things. You look surprised every time I say something. I'm somebody that likes to learn.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know what your lenses are so I can speak the same language. It doesn't do me any good to sit here and mansplain some shit about your lady parts. Like, what the fuck does that mean? I'm going to get canceled and told I'm a jackass in seconds because I should be.
Yeah. I mean, talk about someone who's not in their toxic masculine. Sounds like you.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Like, I don't care where anybody comes from or who they are, except for that they're just being a good human. They just don't hurt anybody else. And also, cut people some slack.
Yeah.
If you're in such a heightened state of change, you have to understand that the people around you are also going through a change where they're being told they don't know who you are.
Mm.
Right? So just have some respect, go through your change and respect the people around you. And if they don't come with you, it's just because you're on a different radio station.
That's a wonderful way to look at it. Yeah, for sure.
You're still in the same room.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, what I was saying about how many physical things I had to deal with, something that also came up for me that year in 2020 was, again, looking at my masculine versus feminine energy and looking at all of these. I had these like these stories that I had forgotten that started to come forward, like how embarrassed I was when I first had my period, how I thought and was convinced that I was pregnant after my first period because I didn't get it for another 6 or 8 months, which is very normal as an 11-year-old. Your cycle's not regular at all. But I was convinced I must have gotten pregnant because I used my dad's beach towel. And that's on South Carolina sex education. And being a preacher's daughter and being terrified. And I was like, oh, I can't tell anybody. I certainly can't ask my mom about this because I was adopted. She had had a hysterectomy before I was born. And I was like, well, if I'm pregnant with my dad's baby, like she's going to be so upset.
My God, with my dad's baby.
Seriously.
Jesus.
Like, and then it... All I needed was someone to give me some actual education.
This is a movie. Like, that's something out of a movie. But at the same time, you were given a set of shame lenses at such an early age. And ashamed of just being alive at the end of the day, being you. Being your own unique human and having to live in debt to your own existence is shitty.
Yep. And I just didn't have anyone to talk to. I didn't have anyone to like tell me that that wasn't true. That the programs within my body had not like lined up yet to have a regular cycle and that it was totally normal. And so I entered into this cyclical coaching program so I could be the person to actually help women and girls and menstruators and AFABs understand what the fuck was actually happening with their bodies. AFABs is assigned female at birth. Yes.
Okay.
So folks who
like,
yes.
I was like, that one went right by me.
Yeah.
I was okay.
Yeah.
That makes perfect sense now. Thank you.
Yeah. And then, you know, I started really working with my womb at that point too, because I started to understand how much trauma was locked in there. And I felt like that was really, again, blocking me from not only my feminine energy, but my creativity. Because when we look at the womb as the seat of actual manifestation, like the power to make magic for sure, that really can come through not only by literally birthing humans, but birthing projects, birthing ideas, birthing our purpose. And so I found psilocybin in 2022, after doing years of work, and I was suffering so extensively from anxiety, depression, and what I would later know is PTSD. I had gone the Western medical model. I had a therapist. I had a psychiatrist. They had tried to put me on the medicines. And I heard someone on a podcast talk about how psilocybin was helping people with not only their mental challenges, but sexual challenges too. And I immediately had her on my show and hired her the second we signed off and worked for about 4 months with a coach to really go deep into the wounds that I had, not only around sex, that shame that I had because I had had herpes my entire sexual adult life, but really looking at my inability to trust enough to receive because I was white knuckling life so hard that I did not understand if I just let go, like God would put it in my hands. The universe would put what I needed in my hands. And 2022 was absolutely like I've had several dark nights of the soul, but that year was pretty rough. I ended up leaving my TV job after I took a break for my mental health, lost 2 of our dogs back to back. So I needed to deal with some repressed grief. Then the grief from my divorce in my late 20s came forward. And then I had to grapple with who am I if I am not a news anchor? And that's again, when I realized, oh, this mask like that you've been wearing is hard to pull that shit off. But when we do, we can truly step into our path and our purpose. And so that's kind of how I was, like you said, on my knees to plant the tree.
Plant the shrooms.
Seriously. Right? Let the shrooms like just like come. Like I felt like I was prostrate on the ground, just like holding on for dear life to like the blades of grass around me. And those shrooms just came right up to just like help hold me.
Mother Earth doing its thing, right? Yeah. And you're not wrong. I think that the psilocybin allows us to feel what it is to be human without those layers. I think THC does that. I think that we have created some kind of barrier between ourselves and the overwhelming love and nature and creativity and all these things around us, that we've created so many layers we don't feel it. Yeah. And my thought is that in certain ways that when you're utilizing these plant medicines, that you're actually shedding the human experience and getting back to your spiritual experience or your existence on a different level. Because people shame those words like spiritual, you know, or having some kind of awakening or a journey or whatever your experience is, who cares?
Yeah.
Right? But know that these are gateways into a different area of the mind, the human experience, that shows you that you're greater than that mask.
Yeah.
You're not learning, you know, that there's something hiding behind it. You're learning that you're basically holding up a frisbee as a human shield. It's so stupid. It makes no sense. But you think you're hiding.
Right.
It's so obvious in those moments, but you have to be stripped.
Yeah.
To see who you really are. And that is that you're a child. You're a child, you're a child, you're a child. I heard somebody say the other day that the goal in life after you have entered adulthood is to return back to the moment in your childhood that was timeless. Because that is the place where you will find your passion and your true self.
Mm.
And it hit really hard because I was like, I know those moments as a child, what I was doing, how I was acting, and how lost in the moments I was.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's who I am now. That's music, that's audio, that's podcasting, that's getting in front of people, that's sharing the human experience. That's who I was. I was told to shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
Oh. So, right? And it really struck a chord with me. And I feel like that if we all think deeply about that, we'll find those moments where we're sitting there like processing nature. Right? For me, that was a big one because I used to fold leaves. I don't know if that's normal, but I remember just distinctly anytime I got a leaf in my hand, I needed to fold it by the seams, like down the line and back and forth and feel it in my hands and smell my fingers and all those things. But you could do it for days and not know anything else was going on around you. What does that tell me now? I just love nature.
Yeah.
Right? And we're supposed to be doing that. But also, I always bring it up, those colorblind glasses. And you see people get those and the amazement and the wonder and the tears and they're on their knees and they're doing all these things. And they're like, what the fuck have we been doing?
Yeah.
Disrespecting the shit out of the beauty that is the human experience with color.
Yep.
Right? Yeah. I think that those are a gateway to that. They give you a chance to see that those masks are simply knots and a rope that is you. And then you get a chance to untie yourself when you're in that state in a loving manner, not snatching it apart like you got somewhere to be. Like, oh my God, if I don't get this rope apart and tie it to this end so they can pull it, and you're screwed. No, you get to sit there and pull it apart and look at it and tell it you're sorry for letting it feel that way when it didn't need to.
Yeah.
You know, and I feel like allowing your femininity to come into this and really embracing it, you're showing people that it's not a weakness.
Yeah.
Can you tell me why it's not a weakness?
I think that it's not a weakness because without it, that's how we have neglected nature. That's how we've gotten this far in the collective where we have so much greed and we have so much capitalism and we have so much just bullshit. Because we have all collectively for generations, I mean, thousands of years, probably been really ostracizing and othering the feminine because that just looks, for so many people, not good enough. I mean, look at what we do to moms. Look at what we do to moms who try to do both working in the workforce and still raising their kids. Like, it's just one of those things where we know we need it because we could clearly not be here without mothers. But there's just something about the way our society operates that, like, it's just not good enough. And I think for me, what I really started to realize was, and this is sort of answering the question, but I'll share, like, in my relationship specifically, when I was in my masculine, my husband could not be in his masculine.
Mm.
I was so masculine that he had to be more in his feminine. Very much. And it wasn't like it was such a fight. It was just because I was the one who was making six figures and he had just gotten out of the Navy and was going back to school. Like, so many things in our relationship, those gender roles were almost flipped. And I had thought for so long, I had to be the one who made the money. I had to be the one who was successful because if not, who was going to love me? But when I did leave TV and I stopped making the money and I, like, because I gotten pretty much broken to my core, had to stop and just understand how to start healing, I saw him raise back up. And so in society, if we start to understand that we can be in our feminine, it's going to elevate those who need to be in their masculine so that there's balance. Because right now, everybody's trying to be in their fucking masculine and it's toxic as hell. And the feminine is not allowed to be in her truth and her true, like, radiance, right? Like, think about radiance. It's such a good word to think of this. Like, I'm not someone at all who is a submissive woman. Like, I am not someone, I speak it how it is. Yet I still can be very much in my radiance and my receptivity and allowing that to come to me. Like, we ain't chasing shit.
No, I often say that, you know? Women train men like monkeys. They pick theirs off the shelf. And then they get them to the level that they want them. Because it's not like we have a choice. Like, men come out that, I mean, it's not. Women have more of a choice of men than men have a choice of women, at least in my generation.
Sure.
Like, it was yes or okay from that side. It wasn't the other way. Like, it's just how it is, right? And that is an imbalance. And it's an incorrect imbalance because it doesn't respect both sides. Right?
Yep.
Equally. And I do agree with you that women are issued a certain amount of shame or not allowed to love themselves unconditionally from childhood because we do take that time to hand them a tackle box of fucking makeup at like 10 years old or 12 years old or whatever, and then tell them the moment that they get it on their face that they're a pretty, pretty princess.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but they weren't before that. You know, or what are you implanting at that point? And I'm not saying makeup's bad. It's not my thing, right? Because I just love seeing people naturally. I think that was a byproduct of COVID-19 and the pandemic. It allowed me to see that, why do I need to go to the Kabuki theater to fucking have a conversation with somebody, right? I think that people are more beautiful in that state. But women are given those tools to cover who they are, to look away, to be accepted. And you see it with age, right? With age, we get to see the scars of the methods with which a woman would have utilized makeup or Botox or something.
Yeah.
Because that elderly woman is next to you in the grocery store and her eyebrows are permanently surprised. They're like up to her forehead and everything else is going down. You know, you're like, Jesus. You know, and it's so sad. It's super sad because they should have been loved for who they were in the beginning. And that really only comes from within.
Yeah. And I think what's happened, and that this is also one of the huge problems with diet culture, is that we are told to do exactly what you're saying. Like, look a certain way, that's femininity. Do this, that's being feminine. When in the truth of the matter is, like what you're saying, being our natural selves, that's feminine. So when I talk about like being in my feminine energy, I'm not like doing the, like, I don't color my hair really anymore. Like, I've stopped getting Botox. Like, to go back, I want to be back at like the weird, raw, feral part of the feminine most of the time.
I love that. Dude, why not?
Because it's not distracting. Like, the way that our society wants women to lurk has distracted us from like living in our truth.
Bro, you want somebody to take you seriously, you can't put fucking hand fans on your eyelashes while you're having a conversation. What do you want him to look at? What do you want him to listen to you or look at you? Which one?
Fascinating thought.
Isn't that right? I just gave up on that. It's true.
Like, seriously.
Why give them billboards to look past when they're trying to get to the point? Just be you. 100% you. And it's much more attractive. In my eyes, women, hear me speak. Be 100% you, as natural as you can be, and accepting of yourself, and you will find your mate or whoever it is at your moment in time. But if you love yourself unconditionally, then you're going to give them something to love, because nobody loves something that doesn't love themselves. You're not really proving a fucking good point. Well, I don't like me. Do you love me?
Seriously.
The fuck is that? No, I don't. Because you don't.
Yep. And I've certainly watched that happen in my relationship too. Interesting, what I've noticed with myself and with people who I work with who are also like really in their masculine, like, and but want to get into their feminine. Like, one of the first places we often go is to like the wild, feral feminine, like the pissed off feminine, the dark feminine.
I love that one though.
Like, we're like, because that just feels natural. Yeah.
Curmudgeons, like, giant armpits. Just
seriously.
Throwing, not that there's anything wrong with that, but it does but, like, happen. Yeah. The extremes are a real thing. Life is a pendulum.
Yeah.
You know, and you grab onto these things and you start swinging with it. You will go as far the other direction until you course correct. But it's pretty funny sometimes. And we see that at the dinner table, that cousin that just picked up the new thing that they are. And you're like, what in the hell is this? You don't even know how to react. And it's not because you don't like what they're doing. It's just because it's wild to see a human go from this to this in a moment's time. Should be a clue that it's that fucking fragile, but hey, that's something else.
Yeah. But I really felt for me, I needed to like, and for a lot of people I've worked with, latching into the dark feminine, like, is almost one of the more masculine areas of feminine archetypes. And it's where the anger comes out. So of course we're angry that we've been stifled for this many decades. And then after I really processed my dark feminine through like working with certain deities and like just getting hella feral, I was finally able to heal parts of myself that I felt were not okay to be in, like the mother, like the maiden, and eventually the crone. Like, I am jazzed to be, I have gray hair now. I'm like, hell yes, we are.
What's
getting
wrong with
into that?
That.
Nothing. I'm just ready to be in all of those aspects that are so deeply in the divine feminine that, like you said, our society is like, nah, I don't really like that one.
No, be somebody different.
Right.
Dance. Dance for me so that, you know, you can't pay attention to the fact that we're fucking taking advantage of you the whole time.
100%.
The tap dancer doesn't know you're fucking taking his wallet because he's tap dancing.
Exactly. Look over here so we don't look over here. I feel like my eyes were opened so significantly when I started to not only work with psilocybin, but leave TV news to how much there were like just so many distractions out there to keep us from paying attention to what the hell is actually happening.
The pandemic was a stick in the spokes of the human experience tire. slammed to a complete stop and everybody fucking flew. And they got to turn around and go, oh shit, we were on a wheel. Right. One of the most fascinating things about that time was when you heard NASA explaining what it was like to be in the space station looking down on the Earth. Because the Earth before the pandemic had almost an electrical pulse that you would see during the time frames that people would travel and work would happen in each city. And you would see the light, the smoke, and everything go in and out on the Earth. And then all of a sudden, a big gasp for air. Mother Earth got to take a deep breath. There weren't 10,000 Kia Sorentos flying around at the same time, right? It got to take a deep breath. And that was super fascinating to me. It's like, how could we not put the brakes on at that moment as a society and go, hold on. We're being given with a very, we're being given a huge opportunity here. And I think that there are groups of people that seized it.
Yes.
Like yourself. Right. And I think there's other people that it scared the shit out of them.
Yes.
And maybe it's not their tour on the rock.
Yeah.
Right. They'll get through it and they'll go with it. And I feel bad. This is a lot of boomers. Right. They were sold masks long before we got masks. You know, every father came out of World War II, you know, shell-shocked to shit and back and was told to be a man and go drink a highball and don't slap your wife.
Yeah.
Right. That was about it. They had to hide every single thing about their situation that it created what? A shit ton of issues later.
Yep. All that trauma that we're still dealing with.
I firmly believe that we suffer from a genetic and hereditary insanity that's passed down from generation to generation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. And I think that so much of that trauma that lives within ourselves. Well, it's fascinating that it's also explained when we look at how like babies are conceived or born. So like you were inside your grandmother because of the fact that you as an egg were in your mother when she was in her mother about
to
be born.
Shut the front door. I never thought about that. That's
how
insane.
Eggs are born, how eggs are created. So like not only, especially when we look at the feminine lines, like the matrilineal lines. And I ask myself these questions all the time. It's like, I know there was so much trauma done on my birth mother and probably on my birth grandmother too, potentially while I was in utero. So when my mother was in utero. So it's like, that's like actual, I mean, contact, right? We're not even talking about like massive, like generations, like your great, 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 greats, how that could get passed down. But two lines back, like that's in your actual like DNA.
You're striking like, so I'm like bells, whistles, fireworks are going off my head. I'm like, son of a bitch, man. I was in that ride for all the stories that I've heard about my grandmother and her struggle with life. And I'm like, no wonder. And I was like a premature C-section pulled out by my fucking big toe or something. So I'm sure that effed me up a little more.
Actually, yes. C-section babies have trauma because of one, like surgical trauma, literally at the cusp of life, but also because of the fact that there's like such a jarring disconnection from the mother. Like, how's your mother wound?
Oh, Jesus. Freud doesn't have enough fucking time to sit here and talk about that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I was a C-section baby too, though. I was a C-section baby, and it's just like so fascinating.
Is that robbed of the birth experience? Is there a moment that happens when you break that barrier and enter the human world that you should have that for the simple fact that it gives you an entry into the world that is made that way, or it's intended to be, or I mean, it makes sense.
I mean, think about like the juxtaposition between the light at the end of the tunnel and also the contractions that happen as you're being born.
Oh, shit. My tunnel's got a sunroof.
Seriously, right? It's not even that. They just blew that roof right off and grabbed the fuck out.
It back like a fucking old tuna can.
Like a claw, like that claw machine. They just like came down and just were like plucked it out. Seriously.
How many times did I fall? That's when if they used a claw machine, you know, that fucker had to use like a roll of quarters and it took him 10 years to pick me up. I'm like, my neck should be about 10 feet long.
Yeah. I mean, that disconnection is just, So fascinating. When I was studying somatic trauma therapy, I was like, they were talking about the fact that the just all of the hormones that flood through the body in a natural birth, like just don't happen during C-section births. And then here I am thinking like, why do I have such disconnection from ever having wanted to be a mom, like my own like birth mother versus my adoptive mother? Anyway, a lot of ahas that have happened in the last couple of years about that specifically.
So I want to ask a question because I personally utilize meditation to find these things out about myself. I've done psilocybin. Considering microdosing, you would be surprised. I am not an experienced psilocybin user.
Okay.
I am a experienced meditator. After 5 years, I've missed a couple of days.
Wow.
And the first time I did, I cried. And then I realized that it didn't matter. Right. But at the time, it felt like a failure in my experience and that I wasn't respecting the gift that I had been given and all these things, which turned out to be another wound somewhere else that I needed to untie. Right. But meditation in and of itself is kind of like if you were doing graphic art, I would be doing pencil. But we'll both be doing the same design.
Yeah.
Right. Or I would be using paints. Or there's methods to get to that level of consciousness.
100%.
And this is also why you see, if you go in too young and start cranking shrooms down your neck, you don't know shit about the human experience, all you're going to do is check out. Well, fuck life. Right? Because you didn't have any wisdom going into it, so you didn't have anything to lose on the other side. You know, and we see those people, they just start fucking eating them like they're candy, right?
Yeah.
So for me, meditation is extremely important for the simple fact that I feel like it gives you a default, something to give a baseline to what psilocybin is, right? Mm. You don't jump on a 10 speed, you start with training wheels.
Yeah.
Right. And I feel like that's a good area to find yourself so that you know even what you're looking at, right?
Yes.
Like if you open the door and slam it and you've never seen anything behind it before, you're just guessing what the shit is back there. You're like, wow, that looked really cool. Right. But you don't know anything. Had you been able to read the door, it said like fucking Pandora's box. This one said like mother wounds. This one said, like,
but you're abandonment issues. Through. Yeah.
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 Why microdosing?
You know, I think it's really interesting what you brought up, right? Because I certainly started with meditation too, got trained as a meditation teacher like years ago. And what I think what you're sharing, which is so important, is that it really does help to give us the awareness to look at our thoughts and look at places where we might want to do work. Where psychedelics and psilocybin specifically come in to assist us even more is by really helping to, I say, thaw out that really rigid part within our brain called the default mode network where our patterns do live like on a hamster wheel.
Mm.
And so when we are working with psychedelics, there's this thing called REBUS, which is relaxed beliefs under psychedelics. And that allows us, again, just like meditation, to come from a place of even more awareness. I like to say like, you know those movies where it's like all the people are around the map and they're like looking down at it and they're like, oh, this is going here and this is there. Like, I feel like I'm able during psilocybin like practices to look down at my life and connect all the dots.
Outside in.
Mm-hmm. Very much like a responsive space.
It's mindfulness in a different form.
Exactly.
I think that you were describing earlier trying to pull off the mask. Right? Mm-hmm. It's stuck to your face. For me, meditation, when I first started out doing this, the analogy that I would use, because mindfulness is a gift and a curse in the beginning, right? Because it will make you feel alone.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It really does. You find yourself observing people and sitting and watching how things are understanding. You start seeing characters. You start like, you're like, bro, that person's actually a cartoon. Like, look at this. They're coming into the gym and they're like, whoop-a-doo. And you're like, you know, it's not them. Like, there's the whoop-a-doo person can be real. Like, but I'm talking about the one that is not that human. Like, they're just acting like something else. But long story short, you start watching these characters And then you start to re-engage. You find yourself taking bait. And for me, it wasn't a mask. My analogy was there's a hole in the wall, right? That you can look through at all the things on the other side that people are playing, or you can come back and observe it. Anytime my head got close to that hole and I engaged, it would suck me in like a vacuum. And in order to get back to the other side, I had to double the effort because it would be pulling me at the same time I was pulling backwards. That's how I felt.
Interesting.
And I still feel that way because sometimes I take the bait. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I'm the character. You son of a bitch, what'd you do? I'm here.
Yeah.
Guess what? You picked character number seven. Character number seven doesn't take this shit, right? And then what happens? I'm character number seven for a fucking month before I realize that I've been stuck in this default mode of protecting myself in this manner for this long. And then not realizing that I was just creating the fucking scenario myself the whole time. Why? Because it's a snow globe. Like you're explaining, all those thoughts are outside of the snow globe. They're only real when you reach outside of yours and pull it in. I got a red one. I'll pull it in here. I'm going to be fucking angry as hell. I'm going to hold this thing. All I have to do is let it go and it goes back out and then it clears back up. Problem is we're like fucking Shiva grabbing fucking thoughts. Am I wrong? At least I am. My shit's on overdrive. So, you know, I think that mindfulness is extremely important in this, and you're correct. And I love that you did do meditation. I think it does give you that window and that opportunity to see that there are greater levels that you can achieve once you realize that you're lovable, that you have a separate existence from the one that you created.
Yep.
That there's something greater than you. And it doesn't have to be explainable.
Yeah.
You can just live in it and love it for the simple fact that it exists. The present is called the present. It's aptly named.
Yeah.
It's a damn gift. Right? And shrooms and THC, plant medicine, all that stuff allows you to open your gift.
Exactly. I think that that's definitely what for me has been the most beneficial. It's been the most healing is finally, as someone who was anxious for her whole life, allow myself to be okay in the present moment and to connect with my body, not just live in my mind. I felt like that's what actually helped me heal from sexual trauma, helped me reawaken pleasure, helped me reconnect to my feminine energy. And also, I'll point out, it's also how I got sober. I've been sober for almost a year and a half at this point. And talk about
congratulations.
Thank you. Talk about seeing people's shit, like get sober and then be microdosing and you see all of their, you see the babies, you see the little wounds and you're like, you see yourself, you see theirs, you see the way they're mirroring your own shit and like how.
Isn't
like,
that
like,
fucking wild when you find the person that's imitating you in your face that you didn't see before because you probably loved that they were giving that back to you.
That, yep. And I've noticed I was just telling my sister-in-law this yesterday, my niece, I feel like was born to trigger the shit out of me because she's at that age. She just turned seven, like literally her subconscious programming.
My niece is that age.
Yep. And it's like, she's coming to this part and I see her do these things that like would trigger me so hard because I want to be like, stop talking so much. And I'm like, wait. Someone told you that at her age. Mm-hmm. We're sure as fuck not telling her this.
Nope.
And it's so many things. I literally was having this conversation like 2 days ago. I'm like, she was born to be my mirror.
100%.
I didn't have to birth her myself. She just came into my life. They moved like a mile from us 7 months ago.
You guys
this little
were
girl.
Hanging out in the same person at one point in time, right?
Probably. Oh, no. This is my niece. Yeah. So my husband's brother's wife.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, then no, yeah. that would make you very, very Appalachian or something. Sorry, anybody in Appalachia or wherever, however you pronounce it. It's the Appalachian Mountains, but I think it's Appalachia or something like that.
You know, anyway. My first TV job was in the Appalachian Mountains, and I think we said it both ways. Yeah. But it's fascinating, right? Like this little being she's absolutely put here to
my niece
trigger
to me.
Yeah, like
she's
I
me.
See it.
She is me. My wife and I talk about it every time she's here. She has no off button. She's testing everything. She's cartoon voices. She's running around. And that's me.
Yep.
Right? Testing the limits of life, probing, trying to figure out what's fun, what's cool. She also has a traumatic background. So you can see her probing for acceptable masks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If I do this, do they look at me this way? Mm-hmm. And you have to encourage a child in that moment to not need a mask.
For sure.
Yeah. Because think of how much damage was done on us, like from the time, like at her age and on, like we learned to stop being that way. And now here we are later in life trying to figure our shit out so we get back to that. And like, what a wonderful
commercial
chance.
There's a little kid in me likes the frosted side. It's like, yeah. Can I feel like I'm talking to that kid every day? I'm like, dude, it's okay.
Yeah.
I need to give him more mini wheats. Like, no, actually, it's the worst cereal on the planet. It's like fucking sugar on a hay bale.
So scratchy.
It's so bad. So I want to give you a chance to tell everybody where they can speak with you and discuss your services and how you can help them with their journey. Let's go from there.
Yeah. So if you are listening to this conversation and you feel like maybe microdosing is something you want to introduce into your life, I have an excellent free guide to help answer all of your questions. It takes the bro talk out and really puts a more spiritual spin.
I just thought I got like a Botox commercial in my head that was for dudes. Brotox.
Right. The Brotox.
It goes in your arms.
No bro talk. Very much how to begin an intentional practice so that you feel confident and clear about how this can help your life. And you can,
intent.
I can put that in the show notes if that's something that you guys want to throw
absolutely
a link to.
Absolutely, we'll share everything.
Cool. And then if you have already started microdosing or you've already had some psychedelic experiences and things feel a bit confusing and you want some clarity, or you have questions about microdosing itself, you can also book a free call with me. We can find out if you're a good candidate for this because we need to talk about the fact that not everyone is a good candidate. We'll talk about how to actually get started and just whether or not we jive. I work with women and those who have wombs or identify as women. But if you're someone who is not one of those folks, I have wonderful friends who are in this space and they work with men and I can help you connect with them too.
Absolutely love that. You know, Leslie, I can't thank you enough for being who you are.
Thanks.
And for showing so much strength through your vulnerability. I don't think we recognize that enough. By showing people that it's okay to be you, you're giving them license to be themselves, right? And when you're yourself, you don't get a mask back after a while because people want to be themselves, right? So if you give them that opportunity, they're going to come with you eventually, right? Or you're just going to disconnect from, hit that other station and move on.
Yeah.
Right? And it's people like you that hand out these opportunities. I like to call them opportunities because they're not always going to work, right? It is our job as influencers, if you will, or podcasters or that type of thing to simply manufacture our passion to give back in as many times as we can in the hopes that someone will pick it up along the way and then they'll catch up to us on the race. They'll either be on our left or our right, or they never show up, right? But at least you're putting it out there and you're leading by example. And for that, I appreciate you. And I know that our listeners are going to learn a lot and they're going to be excited to reach out to you. We have a very strong female listener base. I love it.
Wonderful.
I think it's important. I don't want to be all manspeak, you know, or mansplaining or getting Brotox. Brotox is my new, like, all right, all my idiots out there, please get me a shirt for Brotox. I need Brotox. Figure out how you want to explain it, but that's a t-shirt if I ever heard one. Right?
Yep.
So, at any rate, thank you so much, Leslie. All right. And you're welcome back anytime.
Thank you so much for having me.
Remember, everybody, be cool and keep it up.